This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, as the Iranian people continue to speak out, it's a critical juncture for the foreign policy of the United States. Will we stand by our allies or continue to fund our enemies?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We have debated the proper role of human rights in the Security Council. Some of our colleagues believe that human rights have no place here. They believe human rights and fundamental freedoms are the business only of the governments that control them. The United States does not share that belief.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Human rights are not the gift of governments. They are the inalienable right of the people themselves.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Everyone, welcome to the broadcast. Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. I'll be joined by members of our team at our media center here very shortly. But we want to talk to you today about what is a rapidly changing situation in the foreign policy of the United States. Of course, we've talked about many of these issues on the broadcast. But folks, we want to try to tie several of those issues together for you today. We're going to start with the emergency session of the United Nations Security Council that we talked about on Friday's broadcast. It had not yet occurred when we last came to you over the air. Of course, this was a session that was called by the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, to discuss the situation that was taking place in Iran. We're going to break down what happened for you in that. There was both some strong support for the United States move, as well as some very hostile words from some of the members of the council. So we're going to break that down for you. We're also going to talk about a very important bipartisan resolution that the House of Representatives is going to vote on tomorrow, folks. This is a resolution that stands behind President Trump's solidarity with the Iranian people. That will be voted on tomorrow in the House of Representatives. We will break down what is in that. Folks, we're also going to talk about a rather remarkable story that's coming out of Egypt. It was brought to us by the New York Times. It looks like, folks, we told you that if the United States would lead on issues in the Middle East, especially as it pertained to our ally Israel, that the rest of the world would not have any choice but to follow. Folks, it looks like that is happening, at least behind the scenes in Egypt. We'll talk about that. We're also going to continue this very important conversation about how we use United States taxpayer money overseas. We have this long history over the last decade of continuing to fund countries even if they don't act like our allies. This president, President Trump, has moved to change that. He has moved to draw down on funding of the Palestinian government. He's also moved to freeze some of the security assistance that we send to the country of Pakistan. So we're going to break that down as well. But folks, there's a common theme here, and I want to get Andy's comments, Dr. Andrew Economo from our media center's comments on this right out of the gates, because Andy, to me, the common thread with all of these issues that we're going to delve into is a stronger role of the United States returning to a more traditional role of leading around the world, being a beacon of freedom, and sort of moving away from the last 8 years, more of a passive approach in foreign policy. This is a more traditional role of the United States that we've seen under President Trump.
That's correct, Than. This is the role that the United States should be playing. It is the role that we have always played in the world since we became a power following World War I, and we need to assert that same status today. And it is because of the leadership of a strong president like Donald Trump, I must say, that his leadership and his assertiveness, his support, for example, of Israel and the designation of Jerusalem as the place of our embassy and the capital of the state of Israel, which it has been really for 3,000 years, his determination to cut aid to the Pakistanis, to cut aid to the Palestinian Authority, and other moves that he has taken indicate that the United States reassumes its role once again as the powerful leading nation in the free world. This is the role that we have traditionally, as I said, have played in the 20th century. We now have played this in the 21st century. I hope that the United States goes forward in this capacity.
And folks, you got to look no farther than what's happening on the streets of Iran to know that it is making a difference. I want to know if you welcome these changes. Are you glad that the United States has started to resume its more traditional role in this realm? Are you glad that we are taking a stronger stand for Israel again? Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110. If you're not listening by radio, you can find a video experience of the broadcast at aclj.org or by logging into at Facebook. We're on Jay Sekulow's page, also broadcasting live at Periscope at Jay Sekulow. But we'll be back after this break. Full panel comments. The new and more traditional role of the United States foreign policy. Back after this.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. If you want to be a part of this broadcast, you want to get your comments heard, I want you to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about a really diametrically a different approach for the United States as it pertains to Iran, as it pertains to foreign policy in general, as it pertains to our funding of foreign regimes that don't stand with us or haven't stood with us. And I say different, folks. It's really only different as it compares to the last administration. It is really a return to a more traditional foreign policy of the United States, where if we are going to fund you, if we are going to ally with you, then we expect you to partner with us and advance the national security of not only the United States, but the world. If you're going to fund terrorism, as the Iranian regime has done, as the Palestinian government has done, as in some cases the Pakistanis have done, then there are going to be ramifications, and we are going to draw back on our funding of you. And we have started to see a move in that direction. But folks, I want to start this segment of the broadcast by giving you an update about what happened at the United Nations Security Council on Friday. Well, we told you about this on Friday, that this was going to happen, an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council to discuss what is taking place on the streets of Iran. It was, of course, called by Ambassador Nikki Haley at the instruction of President Trump. And I just want to give you a little bit of understanding about how this takes place, because Russia, who is one of the permanent five members on the council, had threatened to block this session altogether. If they forced a vote on whether or not to proceed with this discussion, Ambassador Haley would have had to come up with 9 votes for that session to carry forward. It appears that during the course of the day that she did secure those 9 votes. That's what she told reporters. And at the end of the day, even though Russia spoke very aggressively against Ambassador Haley calling this session, there was not a vote to block the proceedings. So she carried the day on that first procedural hurdle. And it's just a diametrically different approach from what we saw a year ago, where the United States was not vetoing resolutions against Israel at the Security Council. So a strong move by the United States. And we got some comments from Andy before the break on this. And I want to go quickly to Professor Harry Hutchison, our director of policy, on essentially the same question. I want to break down some of the comments from the various members of the Security Council. But to start with, Harry, What we are seeing is a dramatically more aggressive United States, a United States that is operating more in defense of our allies, not afraid to take on those who are hostile to our agenda around the world, really standing up for freedom around the world. What we saw on Friday at the Security Council was not something that we would have seen from the previous administration. It is a direct about-face from the approach that the Obama administration took.
Fan, you are absolutely correct. The Trump administration has rightly decided to put American interests first rather than rely on the spineless, feckless expert opinion which has characterized the prior administration's approach. The prior administration expressed a decided willingness to lead from behind. This administration has decided to go in a different direction. In the Korean Peninsula, in Pakistan, in the Middle East, and in the Persian Gulf, we will no longer lead from behind. Our enemies will no longer be able to push against an open door. And Nikki Haley has provided strong leadership at the United Nations, despite opposition, for instance, from the French. The French ambassador spoke out in favor of what? The Iran nuclear deal, rather than speaking out in favor of the Iranian people. The United States is prepared to stand with the Iranian people as they confront the oppressive regime of the mullahs.
Harry, I think you're absolutely right. I want to actually break down some of the countries that spoke on the resolution. All of them spoke, and I want to kind of give you my perspective on where I thought they broke down. But first of all, I want to play a piece of sound for our listeners that I think demonstrates really, I mean, there were a lot of great sound bites here, but the main message of Ambassador Haley in sort of reasserting the role of the United States, both at the Council, at the United Nations, and around the world. This is a great summation of her comments that were several minutes long, but this is just a flavor of what she had to say. It's Bite 13, Ambassador Nikki Haley.
We will not be quiet. No dishonest attempt to call the protesters puppets of foreign powers will change that. The Iranian people know the truth, and we know the truth. They are acting of their own will, on their own behalf, for their own future. Nothing will stop Americans from standing in solidarity with them.
Folks, a couple of things. First of all, if you want to express your support or if you have a question about the new role of the United States around the world and in our foreign policy, I want you to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, to be a part of the broadcast. But look, even though I told you that Ambassador Haley was able to secure at least the support of nine countries to hold this emergency session and thereby thwart the vote that Russia had threatened to force, when it came down to the comments of the Security Council, there was less agreement than you might have expected. You had very positive comments from the United Kingdom, and then at least some tepid support from Peru, Netherlands, and Poland, which were all very positive. But you had some very troubling comments from most of the rest of the council, from France and Bolivia, Kuwait, Equatorial Guinea, China, Russia, Kazakhstan. I think Russia was probably the most hostile. And I'm going to go to Colonel Wes Smith on this, but there were basically two main points that these countries made in opposing what the United States was pushing for here. One was that it was not the purview of the United Nations Security Council, that this was a matter for the Iranian people to deal with on their own, or if anything, that it was for the Human Rights Council to deal with, that it was not a security issue. I think that's a ludicrous claim, given the security implications that are at play here, especially with how Iran exports terror around the world. And then tied to that, there was a point of sovereignty that many of them said this is an issue that the Iranian people and the Iranian government has to solve for their own. They are a sovereign nation. Well, I would ask those members of the Security Council, where were you when it came to the rights of the sovereign nation of Israel to determine their own capital? Many of these same countries opposed the United States' decision to respect the sovereignty of Israel and move our embassy to Jerusalem. But Wes, when it came down to taking a stand at the Security Council, many of these nations, many of them are supposed to be allies of the United States, were instead critical of this move. There's a lot of work left to do at the Security Council.
Yeah, there really is. And I think to a certain extent, some of these nations that have been quiet and they've sort of soft-pedaled their reaction and support of the Iranian demonstrators because they're part of the JCPOA. They feel like their strategic diplomatic reputation's on the line because they supported this. So they're a little bit hesitant to overtly criticize the Iranian regime. But, you know, I look at how the United States dealt with our adversaries and our questionable allies over the previous 8 years, and it reminds me of a permissive parent who somehow thinks that if they expect better behavior from these, you know, questionable allies and adversaries, that maybe expecting that will bring out the best behavior in these other countries. And it simply does not work that way. So what you're seeing with the present administration is U.S. goodwill and U.S. support combined with realism, you know, and I think that that's a very sound policy. The era of pretending like people are our friends or pretending like they're good faith partners in negotiations, that era of pretend like as a strategic diplomatic tool is coming to an end, as well it should. And this applies to Iran as well. When the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, was being, you know, lauded and worked on and hammered out, over and over, the Obama administration tried to pretend like that Iran was a good faith partner in negotiations. And that is simply not the case. And what Nikki Haley and the president and others are doing is calling them out, that they are not good faith partners, that the protesters in Iran are longing for the freedom that so many of us sometimes take for granted, and that they need our support. And it is a human rights issue. It is also a security issue because, as you said, Iran is the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. They literally sow unrest around the world, and not only through their own agencies, but through their proxies such as Hezbollah.
Wes, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the last 8 years have brought such a shift in U.S. foreign policy that it's going to take some time to turn it around. I, for one, am heartened that I think we're at least heading in the right direction, that we're at least, again, stepping up onto the world stage and issuing some leadership on the matter. I want to know what you think. Do you think that this foreign policy shift will return the United States to leadership on the world stage? Because I know this is a topic that brings out diverse opinions. I want to hear what you have to say. Is the new path that has been charted by President Trump and Ambassador Haley, is it the right one? Will it return the United States to a position of leadership? I will tell you, at least here in Washington, D.C., we are seeing signs of bipartisan agreement that this is a positive shift. After the break, we're going to talk about a resolution that the House of Representatives is going to vote on tomorrow that essentially echoes the position of the President of the United States as it pertains to Iran and expresses his support for that, a bipartisan agreement in Washington, D.C. That is generally unheard of. And I also think we're going to start to see some consensus around the world as well. But if you want to answer that question, I want you to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, whether you agree or disagree. I want to know if you think this foreign policy shift will return the United States to a position of leadership around the world. 1-800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're talking about the dramatic shift in U.S. foreign policy, especially as it pertains to Israel, Iran, and the funding of terrorists. And I want to talk about in just a minute here a resolution that the House of Representatives is going to vote on tomorrow. It's a bipartisan resolution sponsored by the chairman and the ranking member, so a Republican and a Democrat, of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Ed Royce and Elliot Engel. And I want to get Andy Economo, Dr. Economo's input on this, because Dr. Economo, in my view, as I read through this resolution, it's HRES 676 that will be voted on tomorrow. There are really two distinct sections of this resolution, both of which I think have a very important role for communicating congressional support for the direction that the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, has laid out. And sort of the first section is a series of statements of the House of Representatives expressing the position of the House of Representatives. And I'm going to start there with you. They say that it resolves that the House of Representatives stands with the people of Iran that are engaged in legitimate and peaceful protests against an oppressive, corrupt regime, condemns the Iranian regime's serious human rights abuses against the Iranian people, significant corruption, and destabilizing activities abroad, and demands that the Iranian regime abide by its international obligations with respect to human rights and civil liberties, including freedoms of assembly, speech, and press. So before we even get to what this resolution is asking for, Andy, it is a pretty clear statement that they think that the direction that the President of the United States has charted is the right one.
Yes, they do. And I'm glad to see a bipartisan effort in this respect. I recently heard Ed Roy speak at a conference I attended in Washington, and I was very impressed with his acumen and his analysis and the way that he sees foreign affairs and the role of the United States. And I'm very proud that the ranking member of the committee is going to support this and that it is going to be bipartisan. I think that's very important, that in a case of national and international policy, the Congress stands behind the President of the United States. We know that in our separation of powers, it is the administration, the executive branch of government, that deals with foreign policy, that sets the foreign policy of the United States. But how good it is to hear that the People's House, the House of Representatives, says in this resolution, as you have said, that we stand with the Iranian people, we condemn the human rights abuses of that regime, and we note the support for the protesters, calling on all democratic governments to support the right of the Iranian people to live in a free and open society. And finally, as you have said, to demand that the Iranian regime abide by its international obligations with respect to human rights and liberties, and most importantly, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which says that you allow your people the right freely to assemble, to speak, and to publish in the press the things that they want to say. These are important attributes that we want to urge, and our Congress is doing that in this joint resolution, which I have and I'm holding in my hand, and I hope that it is a unanimously approved resolution by our Congress when it votes. And I think, Than, that vote is tomorrow. Am I not correct on that?
It is tomorrow. My colleague David Fonseca is actually over in briefings about that resolution right now as we speak, Andy. And I'll just tell you, I mean, it's an increasingly rare thing for this kind of bipartisan agreement in Washington, D.C. right now. I anticipate an overwhelming majority will support for this. I don't know if it'll be unanimous or not, but I do think it will be overwhelming. And I think that sentiment, that bipartisan sentiment, is also echoed with the American people, that this new posture is a welcome one. We've actually got a couple of comments on Facebook about this. Margie says, President Trump and Nikki Haley are both very strong leaders. Marianne on Facebook says, as a Canadian, I am so thankful for your president. When the U.S. is morally, economically, and militarily powerful, the whole world is positively impacted. I think that's absolutely right. I want to get Professor Hutchison's comment on the two provisions of this resolution that I thought were the most specific when it calls to a policy action, because they address both something that they would like to see the administration do, as well as something that they are going to have to be involved in. One is paragraph 5, which says it urges the administration to use targeted sanctions and work to convene emergency sessions of the United Nations Security Council. That happened last Friday, so they've already done that. And the United Nations Human Rights Council, which they have said they are looking at doing. And then paragraph 9 urges the president and the secretary of state to work with the international community to ensure the violations of human rights are part of all formal and informal multilateral and bilateral discussions with and regarding Iran. Professor Hutchison, that gets to the question of sanctions, and we can get down into some of the weeds on this, but at the end of the day, the world is going to have to stand up and exert more pressure on Iran to make sure that they come into compliance with the agreements that they made, not only under the deal, but then also when that deal expires in their nuclear program. The United States can lead on this, Harry, but they're going to need the rest of the world to come on board as well.
Van, again, you are absolutely right. It's simply not enough to stand with the Iranian people. We must do more. And one of the things that we can do is, A, we can decertify the Iran nuclear deal right away. And secondarily, we can impose sanctions on the Iranian regime. In addition to current sanctions, which have been waived, we can impose sanctions, targeted sanctions, on the mullahs. It's time to deprive the mullahs of economic and other resources which they have used on foreign adventuresome operations. So, for instance, the Iranian regime spends $6 billion in Syria. As we know, Syria is a genocidal regime. So it is time to impose sanctions on the Iranian regime, make sure that those sanctions hurt the Iranian government, not the Iranian people. But we must do more than simply stand with the Iranian people.
Well, you mentioned sanctions, Harry, and there are levels to this, and we're going to get into this more after the break. I'm going to get Wes Smith's comments on this, but people need to understand what is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. You mentioned on Thursday, January 11th, is the president's next deadline to certify or not certify Iran's compliance with the nuclear deal. Remember, in October, he did not certify it. I expect he will make the same decision. But then after that, folks, there's two things I really want you to watch. As Harry mentioned, there's a rolling series of waivers from the deal, sanctions under the deal, that the president has to determine whether to waive or not. There is, at the same time, new sanctions, a new regime of sanctions being negotiated on Capitol Hill that are bipartisan in nature. And many expect that what the president would prefer is a new and fresh regime of sanctions that are not rooted in the deal altogether. So it's possible he could continue to waive some of the sanctions and really push for a deal on those new sanctions. And Wes, I want to go to you quickly before the break, because in all of this, the number one priority concern of the president of the United States has to be the security of the United States and our allies in the region.
Absolutely. And the U.S. is really the leader for security in that region. And when you look at Iran, they continue to not only violate UN standards concerning human rights, but they're also presently in violation of UN resolutions against them regarding their missile technology. The U.S. is the natural leader to take a stand, to support the people, and to do targeted sanctions in order to hurt the Iranian regime.
Folks, after this break, we're going to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to take all of your calls. And if you lose the last 30 minutes of the broadcast on your radio station, you can always find us streaming live online. It includes a video component at aclj.org or at Facebook or on Jay Sekulow's page. We're also streaming on Periscope at Jay Sekulow. But if you want to be a part of the broadcast after the break, 1-800-684-3110.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Phone lines open for you, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Talking about the new U.S. foreign policy in the world, really a return to a more traditional role. And as promised, I want to go right to your phone calls. I actually want to start with one that may be a little bit opposed, and we like that. We like to have a conversation, especially as it relates to how we spend our dollars overseas and the alliances that we have. So let's start, guys, with line one. Joshua's calling from New Jersey. Joshua, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you very much. I'll be as brief as possible, and I'm coming with a criticism, but I'm simply echoing veterans that I've spoken to. One, I'm not going to say his name on the air because I'm polite. Was a staff sergeant with the U.S. Army Rangers. And we all know the politician, Senator Ron Paul. He's also a war veteran. Our interference in other countries across these vast oceans, we're talking about Iran after the disaster in Iraq, and our own president even admitted during his campaign that Iraq is a complete disaster. It still is. It's under reconstruction, but it's a disaster. The idea of meddling or toying with Iran now, considering the fact that Israel has a professional military with over 300 nuclear weapons, let Israel solve the problem. They have more than enough influence there. Yes, we back Israel, but if you want to do anything with foreign policy, Israel has the cultural experience. They're in the Middle East. We have, and this is what the quote from veterans is, that we have endless tasks to do within our own borders. That's expensive enough. We have a southern border to maintain. President Trump has stressed this. I'm just basically re-echoing and reminding almost the president and his administration, maybe if he hears this, I don't know, that he, during his campaign...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Joshua, and I actually agree with much of it. I want to get Andy and Wes into this conversation because we have echoed some of what you are saying as far as when we are going to spend money overseas, Andy, when we are going to engage with partners, when we are going to make alliances, when we are going to invest dollars or resources, or more importantly, American lives in a region, it needs to advance the security interests of the United States. And for far too long, many of our investments have not done that. I want you to maybe talk about our pursuit of Osama bin Laden and the military compound that was literally right next door to where we found him, funded with many of our dollars, Andy, and yet not advancing the interests of the United States.
Than, I appreciate what the caller said. He's basically saying what a lot of us are thinking, and that is, look at the problems in our own country, our southern border, focus on the United States, and don't look at the international arena so much. But we've got to do that in order to protect and focus on the United States. We cannot allow, for example, the millions and millions of dollars of aid that we have been paying to Pakistan to continue, as President Trump has not allowed it to continue, when in a military operation that was exactly next to where bin Laden was, the Pakistanis were, in my view, had knowledge that he was there and were protecting him. It was important that we made that strike and that we killed him and put him in the bottom of the ocean where he belonged. But it is in the interest of the United States to do the things that President Trump is doing in Iran and the speaking out there, in Pakistan with respect to the Palestinian Authority and throughout the world. You know, years ago there was an election in France. Valéry Giscard d'Estaing was running for president of France, and I happened to be in France at the time, and on his poster were the words, "Il nous faut un président." And loosely translated, that means we deserve a president. We have got that kind of president.
I think that's true. And honestly, the chants that are taking place in Iran right now are very similar. They want their freedoms. They want the money to be spent there at home. So I think many of the sentiments are the same. I want to talk to Colonel Smith after this break about how some of these alliances, including with countries like Pakistan, are very critical for the national security of the United States. But when you invest, you have to actually get cooperation. If you're going to continue to harbor terrorists, then you're not going to get U.S. dollars. If you want to be a part of that conversation, call now. We're also going to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let me just encourage you as well. Go to ACLJ.org, sign our petition demanding that U.S. dollars no longer be sent to our enemies. Should be pretty simple. Back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. I want to get into a couple of issues in this segment. I want to get into the specific funding that the United States sends to both Pakistan and the Palestinian government. I also want to talk about this New York Times story, folks, coming out of Egypt. You're not going to believe what's happening behind the scenes there, although I will say we predicted it on this broadcast, so I do want to make sure we get to that in just a moment. But I want to start with Chris, who's calling from Nevada on line two. I think it'll set up this conversation nicely. Chris, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You are on the air.
Hi, San. How can the U.S. be certain that these countries will follow up and put the United States' interests first if we agree to continue to fund them?
It is a great question, Chris, and ultimately most of that responsibility rests with the administration. There is certainly an oversight capacity with the United States Congress, but I want to key in on one specific part of your question because it's something that we've talked about a lot on this broadcast, and I want to bring Colonel Smith in to explain some of the details here. But let's look specifically at Pakistan in this case, because what the president has done is he has frozen security assistance to Pakistan. It's somewhere in the range of $1 billion. It fluctuates a little bit. But Colonel Smith, $255 million of this is what is called foreign military financing. It is money that we send to Pakistan so they can purchase weaponry. I dare say some of it was probably on that base by Osama bin Laden's compound as we flew over to raid that compound. And then the larger share of it is actually what is called coalition support funds. These are funds that are used to reimburse countries that participate with us in the war on terror and other endeavors that impact the national security of the United States. So, Colonel Smith, I was hoping maybe you could tell our listeners, these are important partnerships. These are programs that the United States needs to make with other countries, but we have to make sure that when we send those dollars, the behavior is not what it has been in Pakistan, where you harbor terrorists instead of cooperate with us. So tell our listeners a bit, if you could, why are these partnerships important? And then how can the administration make sure that the follow through from the countries is what it's supposed to be?
Right. And, you know, Joshua, the previous caller before the break, as a veteran, I agree with him. I mean, we don't just willy-nilly send the troops in, and we don't want to interfere in the affairs of other nations unnecessarily. But like with Pakistan, this is a very delicate strategic dance that we're involved in. And strong diplomacy with realistic expectations and supporting those who share our values, and at least verbally and diplomatically opposing those who do not share our values, is the surest way to avoid military actions, in my opinion. But to Pakistan, you know, since 9/11, then, we have given Pakistan over $33 billion. They are supposedly our ally. You mentioned the money goes to reimburse those who are partners in fighting terrorism. They are an ambivalent partner at best. Not only did they obviously they had to know about the presence of Osama bin Laden next to the equivalent of their West Point, and yet said nothing about it, and we had to go in without their knowledge in order to make sure that the mission was not sabotaged. But they also, they oppose India, and both of them are nuclear powers. And in Afghanistan, from time to time, if we do something they do not like, they have cut off our supply routes. The only way we can supply our troops in Afghanistan is through air routes and ground routes that go through Pakistan. And there have been several occasions when they have actually cut off those routes. And during the previous administration, after those routes were cut off temporarily, we continued to send them billions of dollars. And so what is happening now with this administration, they're simply being realistic that if you are our partner, you have to act like our partner, and that we will support you and give you our goodwill. But you have to stand with us in the fight against terror, the fight for human rights, and so forth. As far as the question the caller asked, how can we be sure that the monies, the billions and billions of dollars that we give to the Palestinians or the Pakistanis or whomever, that it goes where it's supposed to go? There's not a good way to track it, then. We have misplaced, quote unquote, over $100 million in Afghanistan that we simply do not know where the funds went once we transferred it to the Afghan government. So the only way that we can guarantee that we get something for the dollars that we give in aid to other countries is by their policies. Once we give them the money, we have little control over where it goes, and we do not know how to make them completely accountable. But we can demand, as we are with Pakistan now, that their policies concerning human rights and counterterrorism and so forth, that they are in line with U.S. policies. Pakistan, again, is an ambivalent ally. Not only did they do the things we mentioned concerning bin Laden, but the Haqqani network is one of the leading terrorist networks in Afghanistan. And Pakistan continues to give them shelter across the border in their own country. It's these kinds of things that are troubling and that the Trump administration is trying to rectify when it comes to this ally of ours.
Wes, it's just got to mean something to be an ally of the United States. And I just think if we're going to give $1 billion to a country like Pakistan, the burden of proof on how they use that money has to lie with Pakistan. They have to be able to demonstrate to the United States that they are using that money in a way that advances the interest, the national security interest of the United States. And if they can't do it, if it's just arbitrary, if they can't give an answer one way or another, then those funds need to stay in country, in my opinion. Keith on Facebook says, why is our tax money going to any other countries or government? And I think Andy articulated a very good, we have to have investments around the world, folks, for the national security interest of the United States. We just have to demonstrate that we're actually getting a return. And then Richardson on Facebook said, why give money to countries that don't like us? I could not agree more. And I want to run this question to Harry, because Harry, when you turn to the Palestinian government, you talk about, now this funding fluctuates a lot. The most recent year is about $700 million, but there have been years that have been well over $1 billion. And it really became more problematic of several years ago when Hamas joined the Palestinian Authority Unity Government, because it is a violation of U.S. law, Harry, to fund a designated terrorist organization, which Hamas is, and yet the United States continues to send funds to the Palestinian government. So you've seen the Trump administration say that they are going to start drawing back on that funding moving forward. It's going to take the cooperation of Congress. But, Harry, it is literally a violation of U.S. law to fund Hamas. Hamas is in the Palestinian government, and yet some years they continue to get more than $1 billion through the various accounts from the United States taxpayer.
Fan, you are absolutely right. This is a serious problem. But the real problem is the Palestinian Authority's duplicity. Their duplicity matches the duplicity of the Pakistani government as well. But if we focus on the Palestinian Authority, it is time for us to stop funding terrorist organizations that actually and literally kill Americans. And so it's time for Congress to step up to the plate and pass the Taylor-Force Act and to eliminate pay-for-slay programs, which are ongoing in Palestine as we speak. And so this has to stop. They either cooperate with us and support our interest in the Middle East, or we will deprive them entirely of all U.S. funds.
And if you were to stand with us in that call, folks, we have a petition up at aclj.org to stop funding our enemies. We're going to be taking that message to Congress in the next several weeks. So if you want to sign that petition and stand with us in that demand, again, it's at aclj.org. I want to have a quick conversation with Andy about just an amazing article that ran in the New York Times. It was January 6th. And also, folks, in the next segment of the broadcast, if you want to comment about this article, about any of the topics that we've talked about, we do have some phone lines open, so you can call now 1-800-684-3110. We will get right to your phone calls. But, Andy, this New York Times article, we have said on this broadcast so many times that if the United States shows bold leadership around the world, the rest of the world's not going to have much of a choice but to follow, and at least on the issue of the moving the embassy to Jerusalem. It sure appears that that is taking place in Egypt. We, of course, had public pronouncements of opposition from the Egyptian government. But this article in the New York Times, Andy, shows that behind the scenes, the Egyptian government was not only okay with the move, but they were actually trying to let influential communicators know that they were okay with it and to make sure that they didn't over-enunciate the Egyptian opposition to it. This is a fascinating development that's taking place in Egypt.
It really is, Than. You know, as the New York Times article said, television talk shows play a formative role in shaping public debate in Egypt, and Egyptian intelligence services, in other words, the government, often brief the presenters of programs about messages to convey to the public. The hosts typically prefer to characterize the conversations as journalists talking to sources. The point is that we have made a strategic and a determinative sovereign move on the part of the United States, saying that the Israelis have the right to determine Jerusalem as their capital. And that is exactly what has happened and what has been done. And now what is happening, of course, is that tacitly but surely all the countries in the Middle East are realizing America has spoken. We have no choice but to follow. That is American leadership at its best.
Folks, the Egyptian government doesn't want to find themselves crosswise with Israel either. This article is proof of that. One of the quotes in here is the official is cited as saying, "How is Jerusalem different from Ramallah, really?" In other words, we'd be okay if the capital of a Palestinian state was in Ramallah. If you want to talk about this or anything else, 1-800-684-3110. Your calls right after this break. 1-800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. I want to get more into this story that was in the New York Times about the Egyptian response to the United States announcing the move of its embassy to Jerusalem in just a moment. But as promised, I want to start with your phone calls. Joseph is calling from Indiana on line one. Joseph, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Than. I appreciate you guys taking my call. I just have one quick comment. I am all for President Trump's America First policy. And yes, I'm also for humanitarian aid wherever that needs to take place. But we need to come first. That's my comment. Thanks. Have a good day.
You know, Joseph, I think your sentiment is really echoed by the American people, and I'm going to get some input here from Wes, because Wes, if you look at the situation in Pakistan, I think that's really where this is the most clearly on display, because Pakistan gets an average of about $2 billion from the United States in aid, and it's roughly split 50-50. There is some variance year to year. The humanitarian aid, there are some issues with it actually reaching people and actually serving a humanitarian interest. But that is not the funding that we're talking about. We're talking about the 50%, the north of $1 billion that's supposed to be used for security. And if you're sending about $1 billion to Pakistan to use for security, and yet they continue to harbor terrorists, they continue to shield Osama bin Laden from recovery, they continue to not be able to demonstrate sufficiently that they are cooperating with our coalition forces, then that's really where you need to start, with the $1 billion in security assistance. And Wes, I would just say the one added benefit of targeting that funding first, it's something the commander-in-chief controls. If he cannot demonstrate that, he does not need a change from Congress to freeze that funding. He can do it on its own. So that's why I think it's good that he's starting there.
Right. Yeah. This is part of the commander-in-chief's purview, if you will. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, we're looking at Pakistan, for example. And by the way, concerning the call, our diplomacy and the peace of the world, fortunately or unfortunately, is tied up with dollars. We support nations, and in turn for supporting them, they support our policies and they support the liberties and the freedoms and the justice issues that America stands for. So there's no way to dissect the dollars out of our diplomacy and our strategic, you know, policies as far as that goes. It's all tied up together. But again, we do have the right to expect that when we give money, for example, to Pakistan for security, and we've had similar issues with Iraq, that when we give them the money, that they use it for the purposes for which they were intended, but also that they help us in the fight against terror, that they support human rights. I question whether a country like Pakistan, which spends billions of dollars on their nuclear weapons program, which they probably think they need and they probably don't, do we really need to send them $1 billion a year for security? If we're doing it so they will support us in Afghanistan, they've done a horrible job of supporting us in Afghanistan. And because of their fecklessness with the Haqqani Network and the Taliban and others, because the Taliban exist unmolested in the northwest region of Pakistan, because of that, American soldiers have died. And so I think it's laudable that the president says to our ally, Pakistan, or any other ally or supposed ally, that, look, we will help you, but we have expectations. And then our expectations are not unreasonable. They have to do with security, safety, human rights, countering the terror threat that plagues the world. These are not unrealistic expectations and conditions to place on the dollars that we funnel all around the world.
Kelly on Facebook says, I'm praying for the people of Iran. Folks, I think that would be an appropriate posture for all of us today as the Iranian people, at great risk to themselves, stand up for the fundamental human rights that are really God-given rights that are theirs, inalienable. They're not the gift of governments, as Ambassador Haley so eloquently said. I think praying for the people of Iran is appropriate today. Gail on Facebook says, does any country send the United States money? Of course not. We are the most generous country in the world. And so many times, folks, so many times in these nations, not only is the money not spent as it's intended, but the gratitude for that maybe isn't reciprocated. I think it's appropriate to reevaluate that. There's, of course, no constitutional or international law right to United States funding. We get to spend it when and where we choose and in the interest of the United States national security. I want to spend the last couple of minutes of the broadcast here talking about this New York Times story again, because remember, all of this is sort of originated with the United States decision to begin moving our embassy in Israel to that sovereign country's choice for its capital, which is Jerusalem. Back in 1995, the United States passed a law, signed into law by President Clinton, saying that the United States must recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel per that nation's choice, and they must move their embassy to Jerusalem no later than, get this, guys, no later than May 31st, 1999. That embassy still resides in Tel Aviv. And only as of a few weeks ago, when President Trump broke with all of his predecessors and announced that he would begin that process of building an embassy in Jerusalem, was that federal law finally followed. It's a good thing. And folks, we told you on this broadcast, I want to get Andy into this conversation, because we told folks on this broadcast that the rest of the world would start to follow, and that it would start to happen behind the scenes first, as many of these countries recognized that this was reality on the ground and that they would have no choice but to follow, even if they were publicly protesting. Well, now, the New York Times, no friend of the president's, as they are reporting, that is exactly what is happening in Egypt, Andy. Behind the scenes, they are starting to recognize that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel, and eventually the rest of the world will follow. And I think, importantly, they're actually sending the cue to communicators in the region that they're okay with that. They're actually okay if the ultimate result is Jerusalem is the capital of Israel.
Well, Sam, with a leader like President Trump making these kinds of decisions, putting into play and actuality the will of the American people, as you said, this was in the 90s, and we have to wait till the year 2017 or whenever it was that he recognized that we put the embassy in Israel, in Jerusalem, and recognize it as the capital. If America will lead, the world will follow, and that includes the Arab world. It includes the entire world. If we will show leadership, whether they like it or not, we still are the most powerful nation on the earth, the most humane nation on the earth. We help people. We help the people of these regions with their actual necessities of life, but we want something in return, and that is stop the support of terrorism, stop the support of Hezbollah, of Hamas, and these antipathetic regimes. And with a president like President Trump leading, tacitly, the Egyptians are going to support us, the Saudis are going to support us, ultimately all the Arab world is going to support us, but we need that leadership, and I say that the New York Times article reflects that we have it, and we should be proud that we have it.
Folks, I want to close today's broadcast with two thoughts. First of all, I'm refreshed that the posture of the United States around the world is once again where I think it should be, from a position of strength. And I think we need to back that up by no longer sending dollars to our enemies. Let's not send dollars that are then ultimately used against us and our allies. And folks, secondly, and probably most importantly, a 22-year-old protester died in Evin prison last night. And I know many of you, as a result of tuning into this broadcast, know about the horrors of Evin prison there in Iran. Folks, the people of Iran are taking a great risk to stand up for their human rights. We owe them an obligation to stand with them, to shine the light of the world on what is taking place in Iran, the abuses that are taking place there, and calling on our government to stand for those Iranian people who are fighting for their own freedom. Let's do that today. Let's pray for those protesters in Iran, and we will talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.